Hi, I'm India Fisher, and this is the Sirens of Audio.
Please leave a review for us on Apple Podcasts. And please like, share, subscribe, and comment on our YouTube videos. Then you shall be like us. G'day, audiophiles. This is the Sirens of Audio, the show that explores the universe of Doctor Who in the audio medium. I'm Dwayne.
And I'm Philip. G'day, Dwayne. G'day, audiophiles.
G'day, Philip. I'm coming to you from probably about as far as I can go on my travels from Tasmania. I'm coming to you from Broome, and I'm loving it here. I wasn't quite sure what I'd think of the place, but it is a beautiful part of Australia. I think everyone should get and have a look at Broome. There's my ad for West Australian tourism.
Yep, part of the world I don't know at all, but you're almost tempting me to go over there and see it.
Yeah, absolutely beautiful stuff. And you've had a busy week too?
I had a huge week last weekend. One of my sons got married. So our first of our six children to get married. So Stephen married the lovely Georgia, and the day was just, could not ask for anything better. Beautiful weather, beautiful church. The service went down perfectly. Beforehand, we all met for breakfast first with the boys. It was just, everything was perfect. Reception was gorgeous. All our good friends were there. It was just a joyous time, and they did the most ridiculous dance ever. So a lot of fun.
Well, this week on the show, we have a couple of things lined up for you. We are going to be speaking once again with the gorgeous Louise Jameson, this time catching up with some of the things she's been doing for Big Finish and outside of Big Finish too over the last little while, including a Torchwood story that we're going to delve deeply into, but not until the end of the episode because we're going to throw in lots and lots of spoilers. It's so hard to talk about Torchwood double without spoiling this one, Philip.
Yeah, it's an amazing two-parter. It's got so many amazing ideas, so much to talk about that I really want to dig into it, but we can't dig into it without revealing a few mega spoilers. So, yeah, if you haven't listened to it, listen to the rest of the episode first and have a wonderful conversation with Louise. It'd be great to listen to everything else, but we will give you an opportunity at the very end just to turn off and see if you've had a chance to listen to it. Or actually the stuff that we might tell you might actually enhance your listening when you do listen to it for the first time.
It very well could do because it's pretty densely packed. There's lots and lots to enjoy in that story. First of all, last week with us being quite busy, gave us a chance to put together a compilation of our Time Lord Victorious reviews that we did for the guys from around the console. So thanks for your feedback for those who have given us feedback on those reviews. It was great to catch that. And great to finally put that together after such a long time. And, I should mention too that Around the Console has just finished. They've just released today, as of recording, their last of our suggested Big Finish reviews, which was Joe Lister's Master. Have you had a chance to hear that review yet, Philip?
No, I haven't had a chance. What do they have to say?
They enjoyed it. They had some very nice things to say about it.
Well, of course they enjoyed it. Why wouldn't they? We wouldn't recommend something that they would enjoy. So I think that's basically it was our hit for all of the ones we gave them were hits, I think.
Well, they didn't enjoy The Light at the End very much, which was surprising. But yeah, they found that a little bit too densely packed with you know guest appearances.
Yeah, I mean that's a celebration anyhow. Which, yeah, you've got to be in the right mood to have that celebration and just to warm your heart with all those companions and all those doctors.
Very good. So before we get to talking with Louise, there is one thing we need to do first, Philip. Do you know what that is?
No, it's been so long since we've done this. What do we have to do first, Dwayne?
We need to jump down the rabbit hole. Here we go.
Whoa.
All right. Thanks for joining me down this rabbit hole, Philip. You don't know what's coming, as opposed to last time we did one of these. You did know what was coming. I've been thinking about this question for a little while because you've, based on a comment that you made to me when we were reviewing some of the newer episodes, and I wasn't too happy, you said to me that Doctor Who's not made for me anymore. So I was thinking, well, if Doctor Who's not made for me as a you know, a 45-year audience member, who is it made for, and who should it be made for, do you think? Is the television show making any mistakes, and how does that relate to Big Finish? What kind of audience is Big Finish for, and what should they do with that audience? So basically my question is, what are the audiences for TV Doctor Who and audio Doctor Who, and how should those audiences be treated, do you think?
Okay, so TV Doctor Who, I think the audience now is the 12 to 18-year-old is kind of the key audience, but accessible to all people. So I think Russell T. Davis would say, and I think it's always been said, it's a family show. But in terms of the target, it would have used to probably been boys, 12 to 16, 12 to 17. I think now they'd say it's boys and girls in that sort of age group, and they've done things to make it equally accessible, I think, to both genders. And so that's the target audience is for that group there, but it's supposed to be accessible to everyone. But it really isn't being made for 50-year-old men, okay? I don't think we are in Russell T. Davis's mind at all when he's running the show. Hopefully, we can actually still enjoy it. But the message is for that age group, for that generation, which is, you know, two generations now below us, because it's not even the millennials anymore there. It's now the next group down, is that the Zetters, Zoomers. And, yeah, they have a different way of viewing. The whole fact it's gone now to streaming rather than actually even being, you know, the BBC. You know, they're releasing it on it's being streamed before even the BBC show it. So very much it's aimed for that group of people who are going to watch it, stream it. And a lot of the political stuff, a lot of the, you know, the target audiences and what, you know, the current vibe of things is for that group. Big Finish, that is for us. Okay. Big Finish is still being made for people who have money. And so it really is to the, that is more towards the 50-year-old men. No, it's more than that. It's greater than that. But it really is probably targeting the 30 to 60-year-olds, but who have money to spend things and who have nostalgia. And so the shows that Big Finish are doing, that's why there's a lot more. I think they do experiment more as well, but it's certainly aimed for adults, not children. And it's got a lot more touches of old and stuff in it that people are going to know. I mean, the show we're going to review today, you know, the double one, you know, we know it's Autumn's because there's Autumn's the cover, but there were so many things that weren't told to you about it, but you just knew there's noises and sound effects and music cues, which just for us evoke. And then you've got Smashing Glass at one stage, which was, yeah, that was for me, you know, jumping out of buildings, all the smashing glass, that's Spearhead from Space. So Big Finish is for us, our age group, but Doctor Who itself, no, that's for the young people. And hopefully we can still enjoy it, even though we want to enjoy all of it. Is that what you'd say, Dwayne, or you actually still think the TV show should be for you?
Well, I don't think it should just be for me, but I do disagree with what you're saying. Now, you're focusing a lot on age demographics there. So my question would be, Doctor Who was originally made for 8 to 12-year-olds. You would say that right through the 60s and 70s. But the figures that they were getting in viewing figures, you know, into the, you know, over 10 million in many cases throughout that period, were they made up of 8 to 10-year-olds? I don't think so. There was a lot more in that audience. So, and I don't think the themes that you'll get in something particularly like the Letts and Dick's era, the themes throughout there were not dumbing it down for the kiddies, so to speak. So they were making it for a general family audience. They were making it so that everyone could, like you said, it's accessible for everyone, but they weren't just focusing on the kiddies. They were taking it seriously. I don't think focusing on a certain demographic is taking Doctor Who seriously. I don't think classically that was how it was ever made. Perhaps maybe in the mid-80s it was not taken so seriously. I haven't really thought too much about that era, but my eras that I'm thinking of are the 60s and 70s mainly. When I think about those audiences, when it was in its peak originally. So I think that the audience should be taken seriously as a whole, not just a certain area and not just a certain showrunner's point of view. And what was great about Dix and Letts in particular was that those two guys were very politically opposite. So not that that was their focus in the show, but I think that put a lot of balance in the show, particularly during that time. And I think that's very important. So I think that the TV show is a show that should be accessible to everybody, not just, and it should be aimed at everybody. So that's my thoughts on that. As far as Big Finish goes.
Now, I will disagree with you, because the original show wasn't aimed at everybody. It was aimed at children that adults could sit and enjoy. An adult would not choose to go and sit down and watch Doctor Who. It wasn't made for adults to go and sit down and watch if they didn't have children. They sat there and watched it because their children were watching it, but they wouldn't have gone and watched it otherwise. And as much as, you know, a good kids' film will always have humor and levels for the adults that are there to recognize the fact that they're there and have messages that are there for older, it still has to be aimed for a particular audience. It has to be aimed at the youngest audience who are going to be able to sit there if the adults aren't there. And so, and as much as, yeah, maybe when Doctor Who started, maybe 8-year-olds, but by the time that we got to the Hinchcliffe area, it wasn't appropriate for 8-year-olds to be sitting and watching by themselves. That really was being aimed now for 12, 14, 16, because it was getting so scary. So I know you can't aim for everybody. You have to aim for a particular audience and then make it accessible. And I think it should be accessible for all. But I do think that you still have to say this is the target group that you're going for. And Doctor Who is always, the target has always been the child or the teenager being accessible for all after that. So, but I mean, we can disagree with that. But I think you're thinking that it's not, I think they're making it now for that's the same age group that they've always made it for. It's just that there's things happening there that, as an older man, they're not quite for you.
The reason I brought that up is I've been thinking about companies and how they treat their audience, entertainment companies. And a couple of years ago, I'm going to blame my wife. She's listening to me. So I'm going to blame her for this. But a couple of years ago, she wanted to watch a certain show, which was on Binge. And at the same time, Binge started showing WWE. Now, I was a wrestler, a pro wrestling fan years and years and years ago in the 90s when it was huge, late 90s. And I'd stopped watching in the early 2000s, kind of lost interest. But then I saw it on Binge and started getting a bit more of an interest again. And because what appealed to me, what used to appeal to me about the wrestling and still does is the storytelling that they can get into it. And the storytelling I'd heard had gone pretty bad. But in the last couple of years, it's become very, very good. And recently there was a particular story of I don't know how much you know about pro wrestling, Philip. Do you know about heels and baby faces?
No.
How that works?
No idea.
No? So in pro wrestling, you've got the good guys and you've got the bad guys. So, and it all comes down to the crowds. So the crowds want them to cheer the good guys, boo the bad guys, and that gets the crowd engaged and that sells them tickets because the crowd gets involved and they have a lot of fun. But there's stories that go along with it. So there has been one, over the last couple of years, there's been one character that the crowds have been wanted to win this wrestling championship for the last 2 years. And they thought he was going to get it last year. Didn't happen. Everyone was unhappy. But the fans all sort of got over it. And it came to this year and it was sort of indicated that he wasn't going to get a shot at the championship again. But the crowds went absolutely nuts. It went insane. It went on social media. There was a huge uproar because it looked like the match wasn't going to happen. Now, I don't know whether this was designed by the company to go that way, but it certainly didn't seem that way. So the company came and turned around and changed their plans. And in the end, the good guy won the championship and everyone was happy, and everyone's still very happy. So that to me was an example of a company listening to their audience. Whether they were just playing the audience and getting that, it's quite possible, very, very possible. But like I said, I don't know for sure. That's the part of pro wrestling, which is great. You don't know what's real and what's not. There's always a blurred line between. But it certainly seems like at the moment, whereas before, I don't know if you've heard of the controversy that's been in about Vince McMahon. He's been kicked out of the thing. He brought the place up from nothing, and now he's been kicked out of it because of his behavior. But now he's gone, it's turned around, and they're starting to listen. When he was around, he used to do whatever he wanted. He doubled down on things. He did things that the fans hated. People started not going to shows. They started losing money. Now it's turned around because the company started listening to their audience, listening to the fans, and now it's like more popular than it's ever been, and everyone's having a great time. So I raised that up because I think that's a good example of a company, an entertainment company, listening to its audience. I see so many companies just doubling down with what they want to do, hearing bad reviews from people, fans who are unhappy, particularly of well-established franchises like Doctor Who. People voice their concerns about it, and they're not listened to. The people in charge double down. It just flops. And I fear that that's what might be happening with Doctor Who. So I hope not. Time will tell. But I think there comes a time when you have to listen to your audience. What do you think? Do you think that they're right to just double down and do whatever they want to do?
I think that they're in touch with their audience very well. And just some of the fans are grumpy old men who don't like what the changes. I have not had any issues yet with the four programs we've had. I had some issues with the previous era, but that was through bad quality writing more than anything else. I know that Russell T has a particular style with his writing and his storytelling. And yeah, I just feel at the moment that there's people are whinging, complaining before we've had enough to go by. Well, sorry, the stuff I think we've had, I've been pretty happy with. And as much as, you know, there's a few themes in there that, yeah, I wouldn't have chosen to go with. And I know that there's things to discuss. But, I mean, Hinchcliffe was so controversial. He was raised in Parliament, too violent, too this, and we love that era now. I think people can be very quick to criticise. And at the moment, I don't think we have enough details to go on. So I'm very happy to sit back and just try and enjoy it as much as possible. My parents hated Doctor Who. All the adults in my life hated Doctor Who. It was certainly for me as a kid. It wasn't for anybody else. And people have always criticized and complained about the show. Well, that's just what we do. It's everyone on social media just likes to complain and whinge and try and get as many likes as possible. And with the new Twitter system, you get paid. The more outrage you cause, and the more people who, you know, react to your posts, you get paid for it. So people are always going to do the hate, because hate gets more press. So, yeah, I'm not going to complain about the new series yet. The stuff I've seen, I've really enjoyed. And I'm hoping to keep enjoying it. And, I'm waiting to see what happens.
Yeah, you raised the Hinchcliffe area there, that, yes, there was some outrage by some individuals, but the fans didn't hate it, that's for sure. The fans loved it at the time, and still do.
Wasn't much of a fandom back then either.
You're going to bring up Deadly Assassin?
No, I was just going to say there wasn't much fandom back then. There was lots of young people who loved the show. Fandom wasn't established, and there's no social media. So I think we're living in a different age, and to try and know what would have happened back then had it been happening now, I don't think we can compare them.
Very good. Time will tell. I just hope they listen to the audience. Let's jump up out of the rabbit hole. So now that we are up out of the rabbit hole, it's time for our lovely chat that we had recently with Louise Jameson.
So Louise, great to have you back on the podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Good
chances to catch up with a few bits and pieces. I know you've done a big move from home. So how's the move going?
The move's great. It's a 15th century house. So, you know, as I was saying before we pressed record, that the house is a wooden oak framed. And so it kind of breathes and moves with the seasons. It had some lino in when I arrived. And it's like, you can't put lino into a house like this because it literally has to breathe. And I do feel it's kind of grateful that I've been tenderly kind of trying to return it to its former glory. Although completely against planning rules, I don't know if this should go out because it's grade two listed. I've taken down some beams up in the attic with the builder's approval and turned it into another bedroom. So instead of downsizing, I'm actually expanding the house because I thought I'd be moving, you know, just into somewhere smaller. But it's a bit like the TARDIS. It just seems to be, just like, oh, there's another room, hurrah.
What's with that much history? Has it got ghosts?
I'm not sure I believe in ghosts, but I definitely believe in energy. It has some energy. It definitely has energy. Over the mantel and in the fire in the other room, it's got these huge, great big Inglenook fireplaces. It's got witch's hex on it to stop the evil spirits coming down the chimney, which must have been carved in the 16th or 17th century. Little triangles that interlock with each other in a symmetrical pattern. And also, when we were lining the chimneys for the stoves, they found a little tiny Victorian booty of a baby because people would put things, remnants of something that they really love up the chimney to stop the witches coming down. So I don't think I've got any witches in the house. I think I'm well cared for there. But I do feel, I feel gratitude from it. But I could just be, you know, imposing that. It's the eclipse tonight, isn't it? All kind of magical things happening, somebody's saying.
Yeah, that affects America, though. Is it coming over your ways as much as you?
No, North America. I think it's going to get a bit shadowy, but it's not going to be a total eclipse.
Mm. Now, in terms of, you just had a marvellous holiday, I believe.
India. Oh, yeah, my goodness.
Tell me about India.
So I went to Kerala. I went to five different places in Kerala, which is the bit at the bottom, the little triangle bit at the bottom. And I went from a five-star hotel to a houseboat that had virtually nothing, to a boutique hotel surrounded by monkeys, to the highest tea plantation in the world, which had a really run-down, bright green, wonky shrine up there where I lit a candle for humanity. I saw people so rich and people so poor. I danced in a rice paddy field with a whole load of village young women who they invited me to join them in this dance. I was useless. They thought it was hilarious. We were served food on banana leaves and ate with our hands, and a monkey stole my phone. I had to shout at it to give me. It had my phone in one hand and a bag in the other, and I went oi like that, and it dropped the phone, and then it put its hand in my bag and pulled out some wet wipes, and then dropped the bag and kind of waved the wet wipes at me like he was going, nin, 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 and ran off. Thought he'd got the prize present. You know, thank goodness he didn't take my phone, or she. So that was fun.
Were you traveling with anyone, just by yourself?
My friend Kate, who used to be a nanny for the children when I was much younger. They were much younger. She came when they were about 5 and 7 and stayed on and off for about 5 years. And when she came, she didn't have any qualifications at all. So while she was nannying and I was working, we fitted an education around her and my schedule. And she left with a master's and is now a top travel agent. So she organized the whole thing. And we got treated like royalty because they all thought she was writing a report for them. And she just said, "What do you want to do?" And so I gave her a list of, the stuff I wanted to do. And she made it happen. She just made everything happen. It was amazing. The colors, the smells, the backdrop of sounds, the everywhere you could hear chanting and drumming, wherever you went, and car horns. Oh my God, the driving is terrifying. Have you been?
Not to India.
Have you?
I've been to
But
China, and it was pretty
similar in
terrifying.
Asia. The
Isn't it?
Asian cities are similar. Yeah.
I wouldn't even get on a bike there. I mean, it's just, and there's hardly an accident. That's what's extraordinary. And mopeds passing with cows on them and dogs on them and babies on piled onto a moped. It's like
Yeah.
extraordinary. And we saw some classical. I mean, I felt like I'd had 5 different holidays in 15 days,
What was the inspiration for India? What made you think, I want to go to this place?
I was going to go touring with a theatre and education piece back in 1981. And then I discovered I was pregnant. And I thought, I don't want to be pregnant in India in the early 80s. I just didn't feel it was safe or responsible. So I cancelled that trip. And then 20 years later, I booked a trip and then I got a job in the West End. So finally, 40 years down the line, I got my dream. I mean, it's so rare we have a paid holiday in this profession, but I am in a job at the moment that gives us that paid holidays. So I took full advantage of it, and there we were. I wouldn't have missed it for anything. It was, and Kate and I got on like, there wasn't a hint of annoyance or pissed offness or, well, not from my corner anyway. Maybe she was very pissed off with me, but it's a slight gamble, isn't it, traveling? Because when we were together before, it was all about the children. And we had that as a kind of focal point. And I was, maybe a bit worried that I'd be too old or too, couldn't keep up, But no, it was marvelous. It was the whole thing was marvelous. I highly recommend it, honestly.
Yeah,
The
it's the experience of
houseboat. The houseboat with the and the colours, and I sent you the picture of that sunset, didn't I, Philip?
You did. It was
That,
amazing. It was...
oh my goodness. I didn't know you could get such colours
Yeah.
from the sun going down. Just beautiful. Yeah.
So emotionally, it must have been ups and highs and lows, though, too, in terms of the people and the riches and the poverty.
Yes. She said she'd been to Kerala 8 years before. Kate, she's incredibly well traveled now everywhere. There's hardly a country she hasn't been to. And she said she can really notice the difference that there is far less poverty now in Kerala and Kochi than there had been 8 years ago. I did see poverty, but I didn't see deep misery and I didn't see drug addiction. I didn't see squalor. But I did see poverty, yeah. And that is, like I said to you, everything's political, isn't it? In the end, everything is, but the riches of the newfound riches of India do seem to be trickling down. But the north, I understand, is far worse for poverty. In the
So
south, yeah.
you talk about getting holidays with the job. So you're still working on Emmerdale?
I am. I've signed up until next January, and I'd like to do at least 2 more years. But like I was saying earlier, I'm not sure what the future of soap's going to be. But I do feel very, very blessed at 72 to have to have the regular income and the, seeming appreciation of my work still there. I have no intention of retiring. I just hope the profession keeps giving the way it's given.
Yeah. What have you enjoyed most about Emmerdale?
Probably working with Zoe Henry, who I think's phenomenal. She plays my daughter.
Yeah.
And she on and off camera, she's just an amazing human being and now a very, very good friend. And I feel a little bit like the daughter I never had, not obviously doesn't family is family and nothing can kind of match that, but I do feel very, very connected to her.
How
And
does a week look in your life? How's a week on Emmerdale look?
varies very much on a tough week. I travel up on a Sunday or a Monday and I work from 7 till 7 for the next 4 or 5 days. And then I'm exhausted. But this week I'm traveling up on a Tuesday and I work Wednesday, Thursday, and I'm coming home again and I'm only doing 2 scenes. So it swings and roundabouts. I love weeks like this.
You must also love it when you've got the main plot lines happening too.
Yes, I love it. I love it when you can reach and grab and push and stretch yourself I emotionally, keep yourself match fit. I love all that. Of course I do. But I don't mind serving a pint in the pub as well. Happy doing that.
How long do you get scripts and how much time do you get to learn your lines, and is there any rehearsal time anymore, or is it
No
rehearse and
rehearsal.
act, no rehearsal?
No rehearsal at all. 6 weeks, maybe. And then the amendments can come in as little as 3 days before. So I almost learn it in story order. And then I shuffle it into recording order and learn it thoroughly. And then I hone it the night before. So I have three kind of bashes at getting it into my head. And then something happens when you block it. So you add the muscle memory to the learning you've already done. And then it clicks. You trust that it clicks into place. And when you're looking at, 11 scenes in a day, rare, but it does happen. And your heart's beating at 7 o'clock in the morning, going, I'm never going to get through the day. It's Zoe Henry comes in and goes, how do you eat an elephant? And I go, I don't know. And she goes, one bite at a time. You think, okay, I'll just look at the first scene.
I mean, I've been watching some of your work. It's still extraordinary work that you're doing. I don't know how you manage to produce such high quality drama and acting when you just don't have the same sort of rehearsal time. But yeah, the cast seems to be pretty astounding doing it.
I've landed in a really lovely family, haven't I? I mean, I've the Mark Chanock and Zoe, and I work with Dominic as well a lot, and that. So I've got the really. I feel like I've hit the A team here. And they've been so supportive and lovely to me.
Do you have any idea what the
Not so
writers are?
good. You know what I used to be brilliant at and kind of show off with was double speed runs. I used to be so good at them and be able to just rattle through the line. I can't do that anymore. I have to just slightly wait for the thought process to catch up. And I think that's probably, it's partly lack of rehearsal, but it's also my age. So, and they're very tolerant with that because they do those rattly run-throughs before we hit the set. But I know they slow it down for me. They pretend they don't, but they do.
Absolutely, I'm sure you're still doing amazing. Now you're doing other things in terms of writing as well, so you're still keeping your writing happening.
I'm working with a dramaturg on the advice of my literary agent, which I think is very sound advice. You can always learn, can't you? This whole life is a lesson. And he's been marvelous, absolutely marvelous, teaching me about structure and character development in a way that I would be able to teach a drama student. He has that knowledge to give me as a writer. So I found that enormously helpful. And suicide in young men is very prevalent and frightening, and the high percentage of suicides of young men. So I wanted to do something that would explore that and the repercussions of suicide on the nearest and dearest, and indeed on strangers. And I'm trying to write a TV series around that.
Fantastic. Now, just to turn a big finish for a little while, I actually worked out you are now the actor who's performed in more ranges of big finish than any other actor. In
Am
fact, I think three times more than any other actor. Because I did a quick rundown. So you have performed so far in all the Doctor Who ranges, mainly with the Fourth Doctor, but not exclusively. You've done work with the Fifth, the Sixth, and others. Companion Chronicles, Gallifrey, Gallifrey War Room, Gallifrey Time War, The Tomorrow People, Survivors, Omega Factor, Blake Seven, The Ninth Doctor, Pioneers, you did had a role in that, not Leela. The War Doctor Begins, The War Doctor, Shilling Sixpence, Unbound, Classic Companions, The 8th of March, A Box of Delights, Irish Wild Time, Wicked Sisters, The Robots, Atta Girl, Jago and Lightfoot, Dark Shadows, King Lear, The Cleaning Up Movie, and then the drama showcases of Pulling Faces, My Mother Was an Alien. And this week, your Sapphire and Steel performance has been re-released. So you're still. Yeah. So what's it
Wow,
like?
that's quite impressive, isn't
Had you realized that
it?
you'd done that much?
No, I hadn't. I'd forgotten some of those. No. And King Lear,
So,
got to work.
oh, King
How
Lear is still
amazing was
what
that?
that's still one of my favorite pieces that you've done. That is the most extraordinary piece of work. You're so awful. So wicked and evil. Not awful, you're wonderful, but evil as.
Well,
So
she made the hat trick for me because I'd done Cordelia at the RSC and Regan with Oxford Theatre Company, and then they gave me Goneril. So it was lovely to do the hat trick of sisters.
now 12 months ago, so what I hadn't mentioned, you now own Torchwood. You did a double CD release. I
Did
couldn't
I?
even remember
Because we
doing
record them
that.
about, well, we record them 3 or 4 years
Years
in
ahead of
advance.
time.
Yeah. So who
So,
directed that?
I said, because that's what I was keen to talk to you about. Yeah, let me just find it. Oh, sorry. Oh, here it is.
No.
It was a two-parter. The script was written by Guy Adams,
Yeah.
I'm pretty
Guy.
sure.
Yeah, and so it's directed by, it's probably going to be, written by Guy Adams. Oh, directed by Barnaby Edwards.
Oh, Barnaby.
Yeah, and he was actually
Is
in it
he?
as well. Anthony Howe, Sam Stafford. It was set in the 1970s in London, and you were the head of Torchwood. You were acting as a head, but you were a bigger.
Oh, yes. With
Yes,
neurodiversity,
and the
alcoholic.
neurodiversity. Yes.
What a part.
Yes.
What a gift of a script it was. I
Yeah,
mean,
so
Guy
I
is
went.
brilliant anyway, but I believe, Guy, please forgive me if you listen to this and I'm wrong, but I believe Guy's identifies as being neurodivergent,
He
but I might
does.
be wrong.
No, he does.
So he wrote so eloquently about how the brain works at a million miles an hour all the time, with 50,000 different thoughts coming in, and to escape from that, how do you escape from that? Those permanent voices. I think I mean, it's quite trendy, isn't it, to say that you've got some kind of divergence going on. But I've found since I, because I meditate regularly now, have done since pre-pandemic I started, and I find it's made such a difference in quietening my brain a bit, being able to hone in on exactly. Touch of the Pamela Salems coming into play, with just training your brain to shut up for a bit.
So, in terms of have you actually been doing much recording? I know everything's now recorded years ahead, and all the work you're doing with Emmerdale, are you getting much time to actually do much Big Finish recording?
No, I snuck off occasionally, and when I know I've got a week out, and I let David know, because Tom's way ahead of me. He's recorded prior to me on a lot of stories, and we've got one more to go that has already been recorded. And then I think that might be it for a while. I want to suggest maybe doing a bit more writing for them, segueing into that area a bit more. But David's now, well, he, I mean, David's
Maybe
cut down to
retired.
kind of, nearly. And he and I worked an enormous amount together. So by him doing less, inevitably I'm going to be doing that.
So what are you looking forward to over the next little while? What's coming up for you?
I've just finished a book called Theatre for Dreamers by Polly Simpson. And it's set on the Isle of Hydra, which is a Greek island. And it's where Leonard Cohen wrote So Long, Marianne. And the book is so evocatively written. I've booked a holiday there. So that's in September. I thought, I just want to go and see that. I want to go and see those cliffs and smell those smells and look at that sea and see that sunset. So I've got 5 days in September, and I've got a writer's retreat in October. So they're my two little lights at the end of the working tunnel at the minute.
You're not slowing down at all, are you?
A little bit, a little bit. I mean, all the extracurricular stuff is absolutely in my own time. I mean, I tell you, I'm in working mode. I haven't started writing today. Haven't started yet.
Well, you sound like a
And we're
perfect
what?
writer then.
What?
That's a perfect writer then. All
Okay,
writers,
yes.
all
Oh, I
writers
must
spend
make another
hours and
cup of
hours
tea.
procrastinating.
Yes. I just felt because I've really got to finish the ironing before I put, pen to paper.
Listen, looking forward to continue to see what's coming out. I know there's lots of stuff banked up. You've got years of enjoyment more from you, and looking forward to what's in store. And I hope your writing keeps going well, because
Thank
everything
you.
you've been up to now has been brilliant.
Thank you. Well, we try. And I look forward to coming to Australia very soon, eh?
Yes, we need to tee up the dates.
Yeah.
It soon. Well, thanks for
Okay.
joining us again, Louise.
Lovely to see you.
Well, there you go, Philip. Always lovely to catch up with Louise. It's been, what's it been, about 6 months since we spoke with her about the Omega Factor. Is that about how long it's been?
That'd be about right, I think. Yes. Yes, it's always wonderful to have Lou. I love talking to any time that we can.
Very good, very good. All right, now, did you want to talk about some recommendations before we go into the in-depth spoilerific review of Torchwood Double?
I am happy to do some recommendations. I guess you want to go first, though, don't you?
Hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on. I'll just check my list. It's your turn to go first. That's what it says there.
Are you
I can only
sure?
go by the list.
Oh, okay. If you're sure. Excellent. What I'm going to recommend two things. One I finally got to after a long, long time, which was the Paternoster Gang. So I don't know when that came out. That came out ages and ages ago, months ago. But for some reason, it sat there in my feed to listen to. I just didn't get to it. So I finally got to the Paternoster Gang, which was just a lot of fun. I mean, I love the Paternoster Gang. I think they're so well written. And it's kind of the Jago and Lightfoot. I mean, I loved Jago and Lightfoot. And so Paternoster Gang, I saw the Jago and Lightfoot now, Victorian England, very similar sort of stories, or just a bit out there. So I don't know whether you got to listen to that when it came out months ago, but it's worth going back to. It's the first box set of a series of three or four coming out. So worth getting. The other thing I listened to too was The Quin Dilemma, which is the celebration of Colin Baker's 40 years since joining the TARDIS crew. So I can't believe it was 40 years ago that Colin joined. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm an old man now. But anyhow, as a bit of a tribute to Colin Baker, three different writers, and they don't tell you which stories they wrote or which bits they wrote, but three writers got together, and I guess it's not really the twin dilemma, but that was a bit of a joke on it, the Quin Dilemma. It's about trying to find the rightful heir of a planet, and so the king sets them with a task, which is they've got to go get a doctor. So whoever can find the doctor who is blamed for something that happened on this planet, the king says, whichever son manages to bring me the doctor, and all the sons head off into different time zones. So you've got a different doctor in different time zones. So one's with Melanie, there's two with Perry, a young Perry and the old Perry, there's one with Flip and Constance. And so the sons all go off to try and capture a doctor. And a bit of a spoiler, but at the end, all of them managed to capture a doctor. And so we've got all the doctors from different eras all together. And some of the conversations, you know, how you, when you've got multiple doctors together in one scene, it's always amusing. When you've got multiple Colin Bakers all together in one scene, it is hilarious. And so different adventures. Yeah, it's a bit of a farce of an item, but really clever writing, lots of fun. Have you listened to it, Dwayne?
I've listened to the first two or three episodes. I'm in the middle of it, I think. I think I'm up to the Flip and Constance one.
Okay. Yeah. There's one or two bits in there that didn't grab my attention as much, but the second half really just starts to steamroll, and the Flip and Constance and onwards is really brilliant. I liked them all at the beginning, but there's a few other bits and pieces. They've got from, what's his name, the author wrote... Herbert.
Oh yes, from Time Flight. Time Lash.
Which was in
H.G. Wells.
H.G. Wells. Thank you, Herbert. So they've got Herbert and Perry are traveling together as a doctor, and I do not like Herbert at all. I don't know what it is with Big Finish and male characters, but they sometimes come up with some really dopey male characters, and Herbert's one of them. And so Herbert just got on my nerve. So, but aside from that, everything else is really great, really worth listening to. But what about you, Dwayne? What have you been listening to in your travels on the far side of the continent?
Well, I'm going to break from tradition, and I'm going to recommend a TV series that I've just binged the whole lot of over the last few days. It's one that's really, really affected me, like a television show hasn't done for such a long time. It's an Australian show. It was three series. I think the last series was in 2021. It's called Mr. In Between, and it's on Binge. Have you seen that?
No.
It stars a fella by the name, and is written by a fella by the name of Scott, and his name's gone from my head. I said to myself, I must remember his name, but I can't remember his name now. Scott somebody. It's the only thing he's done. It's the only thing he's written in. He wrote a movie in 2005. Had $3,000 on the budget. It won a whole heap of awards then, and it took 12 years for it to come to television. It was absolutely amazing. It's touted as a black comedy, but I would say it's more of a serious drama with a few comedic elements. But it's about a hitman who is trying to balance life with being a hitman, which is ultra violent, of course, and then he comes home and, you know, helps, plays with his daughter and, you know, hangs out with his mates and has to deal with his brother who's got MND and has to deal with a girlfriend who he can't tell about his life. And it is one of the most affecting shows that I've watched in a long, long time. It's 26 episodes. They only go for 25 minutes each. So, and they all end on a cliffhanger. So you think, oh, I can't stop. You've got to keep going. So I watched the whole lot in a couple of days. But the conversations.
So Scott Ryan.
Scott Ryan. Thank you. Thank you, Philip. Absolutely amazing. I saw him recommended by someone on a YouTube video that I was watching. I thought, oh, I'll go and check that out. Sounds good. Because he said this guy could be the next Bond villain. And he's got such a amazing face, and he has this really intense smile with big teeth. He looks, you know, like, oh, it's very, very strange. But he's such a great actor, and the dialogue in this show is just so down to earth. The way he looks at the world, and I could relate to him because I've known people like him. I stopped myself from saying had friends because I haven't had friends who are hitmen, but they were very much like him in that they grew up in a certain childhood that led them to look at the world in the way he looked at the world. And I've also had, you know, being in the disability sector, I've had clients with MND, and I've dealt with clients who have deteriorated. I've seen it with my own eyes, and it's done so well in this show. Anyone who wants to watch someone or see what someone with MND has to deal with and how it goes through and how it can deteriorate so quickly, That's really well done in this show too. So that's what I've been binging. And if anyone can get a hold of it, I'm not sure where it is overseas, but I know it's Binge in Australia. So definitely check out Mr. In Between.
Excellent. Thanks for sharing that.
All right, let's move on to our review of Torchwood Double. To get us there, let me read the blurb. I think it's Double is in two parts, part one and part two, but I think the blurb is the same on both parts. So, 1970s London is a place of suspicion and murder. The assassination of an entire embassy comes to the attention of Torchwood. There's a global energy crisis. There's an alien invasion. Petrochemical companies are subject to hostile takeovers by the mysterious Nessoil. Extremely hostile takeovers. Roberta Craven was once a spy. Now she's broken, but she can still see the patterns in the world, and they're closing in around her.
From Big Finish Productions,
Torchwood Double.
The entire staff of the Libyan Embassy in St. James's Square, every single one of them has their neck broken. Someone's sending a message, so who's the message for?
Oil rigs standing idle in the sea when the UK's desperate for oil. I mean, if they didn't find anything.
Oh, they found something, all right. A lot of something.
The future's looking bright for Nessoil.
Is this really Torchwood business?
Torchwood business is whatever I say it is, and I am bored with chasing lights in the sky. There are a species of alien known as Nestines. They can work with, mould and control plastic, which might explain why they seem to have such an interest in oil. Lots and lots of dead people just to get some oil.
That's how you always get oil.
Big Finish. For the love of stories.
All right, Philip, what was your initial reaction when you went back to listen to this after the first hearing, which I think is about 2 years old now, this story?
It is. And the first time I listened to this, I actually listened to it in my swimming pool. I remember having it on the speaker, and I remember just floating in the pool listening to this. So it was a while ago. And to be honest, I didn't remember it at all well. And it really felt like I was coming to it fresh. I do want to say to people, we will be having spoilers in here at some point. So just be aware that if you don't want any spoils, then stop listening soon. But we'll give some general stuff first. I really enjoyed this on the second listen. I think the thing that really struck me was Louise Jamison's performance, that she is just outstanding. The Doctor Who has had some really fine actors in it during the course of 60 years. But one of the finest actors they've ever had is Louise Jamison. And in part, that goes on to show the career she went on to have, because she has had the most amazing career and continues to have into her 70s. She's still sought after. But the performance she gives in this is like nothing else. It is so powerful. It is so affecting emotionally. It is stunning. Now, I'm not saying I like the character, because there's so much to not like about this character, but I cannot fault with how Louise has played it. So it is just spectacular how well you get to know this character. Of course, usually Torchwood is characters, the Torchwood series has the five regulars in it. This is a different Torchwood we haven't seen before. It's 1973 at the height of the disaster of the government that was happening in England. It was during the IRA bombings. It was during the oil crisis. It's a really uncomfortable time for the UK at that stage. And so this is Torchwood in that period. Roberta's now been introduced to as a character that we haven't met before. But within 5 or 10 minutes, you understand who she is. And then for the whole two discs, it's really the exploration of one character. And different characters come in and out of the scene. And there's a very strong storyline carrying on here. But you are really only just following Roberta's journey. And so Lou has to carry the entire show, and she's just, yeah, she's spectacular. I cannot speak more highly of this performance. If you want to hear a tour de force of what it is to be an amazing performer, this is it, because the entire performance is astounding. Not necessarily nice, not necessarily comfortable, but astounding performance, and this is true art. So that's the first thing that struck me. What about you? What first struck you about it, Dwayne?
I totally agree with you on Louise's performance. And as you were saying that, I'm thinking, how did she not make it huge in Hollywood? Maybe that was through choice. I don't know. She wanted to stay in the UK, but she certainly is one of the finest actors. So echo your sentiments there. She's playing a neurodivergent character. So someone who obviously has a lot going on inside her brain that's different to other humans. Although we all have different things going on in our brains differently to everyone else. But yeah, neurodivergency is her characteristic there. And it's helped along by lots and lots of alcohol. So there's lots of drinking and talking to herself and talking to other people who have who we find out have a different presence than we think they have. I'm being a bit cryptic there, Philip, but and this is written by Guy Adams. So I think Guy Adams himself, being very open about being neurodivergent himself, and having a lot of empathy with people like that, I think he's put a lot of himself into the character of Roberta. So if you want to get a sense of how someone would think, it's a good way to get to know someone with neurodivergence, I think, to start with.
Can I give you just, I want to just give you two quotes from the play, which I there's lots of quotes in it that are worth grabbing. But in terms of neurodiversity, the main character says a couple of things. Give two. One is she describes her brain as every neuron firing in perfect harmony and then having to live in this muffled, empty world. So she's talking about her brain, that everything's firing and yet the world around us seems muffled. And the other way she describes how she thinks is everything on the outside, this is outside of her brain, everything on the outside moves so slow. Every conversation, someone needs to turn you all up to 45 so I might be able to dance with you. So for you young ones, you wouldn't know what 45 is. In the olden days, there was things called records, which you should put on turntables. And most normal records played 33 revolutions per minute, 33 RPM. And so that it would turn 33 times a minute. But a single would be on a 45 RPM, which spun faster. And so, yeah, this idea that every conversation, you all need to be turned up to 45, so I might be able to dance to you. It's just beautiful language. One of the things that the author does, the guy does, is he really has a beautiful use of language. It's not naturalistic, and so there's large parts of the scripts that doesn't sound naturalistic because it's a heightened way of talking, but it's a beautiful way of talking as well. So, yeah, those couple of things I thought was an interesting way of trying to view the world. I'm not neurodiverse, so I don't always get it, but it really helped me try and get inside the brain of a neurodiverse person where, their brain is always moving so fast. I find that helpful.
So as far as Roberta Craven goes, I felt like I didn't get to know as much about her as I had hoped. So I was hoping to get more of her story. But then the end of the story kind of changed all day. I thought, where can it go from here? But I was very interested in the character, but I did feel I wanted to know more. Did you feel there was much more to know?
I think that there was such fast storytelling. There was such a huge epic story to tell in terms of, we change continents and there's so much happening so fast that I guess, still felt like a lot of character depth in one character because you really only hear the story of one person and people interacting with her. But it was certainly a huge, it's a mammoth task to try and attempt in such a sort of storytelling, I thought. What do you think about, we should talk about the writer, I thought, a bit, in terms of Guy Adams. What's your usual impression about Guy Adams and how he wrote this?
I've always enjoyed his stuff. Whenever I've seen his name, I've thought there's going to be something very interesting here. I do recall, I think he wrote one of the stories on the Sixth Doctor box set that was about the 11. I think he wrote one of those stories
Yep.
that really stuck out to me. And I think I really enjoyed all of Adamant Lives, which he wrote the lot of, didn't he? So, and starred in as well, not as Adam
Yeah.
Adamant, but as the sidekick. I think he's, what was the sidekick's name? Can't remember. Symes, I think. So yeah, he's one of those writers which seemed to have quite a good run there, and then sort of disappeared off the scene for a while, and then has come back every now and then with a piece by this stage. So it's always fun seeing something with his name on it. We did get something else recently with his name, didn't we?
I actually think he got ill quite recently. I think he got ill for a long period of time. I'm not sure whether it was COVID related, whether he had long COVID, but I do
Right.
know he got very sick, and that had a big effect on him for a long time. I think the thing that always strikes me about Guy Adams is the fact he really is a horror writer. So most of the time when he's not writing Doctor Who, he writes horror. So books and other things. And the bits of that I've read are pretty horrific. And I think in terms of his Big Finish output, this is probably the closest he gets to his horror. And there are certainly a few scenes in this double story that are really horrific. In fact, he starts horrifically and continues for a while. So there's a lot of very horrific stuff, but he always tempts it with humor. And so there's lines which are very funny amidst what is very bleak and dark. So yeah, that is certainly one of the most interesting things about his writing.
What, how do you think the Autons came across in this story on audio? Particularly, I think the death scenes, they were very, very graphic in the sound design department, weren't they?
Yeah, I was listening with headphones on this time. I think so. The first time I listened, I was in the pool, so I had a speaker by the pool, which was very loud. But having headphones on for those death scenes. The sound design certainly went to task. It's actually an interesting sound design too, because it's people who don't usually do a lot of work. I'm not sure what else they've done. So the sound design's by, oh no, so sorry, ignore me. I must be watching something else, because Toby Robinson did it. Sorry, I can't say his proper name. Hrishchek Robinson. I can't quite get the right. I think it must be the north up there anyway, with its surname. I can't quite roll my R's the right way. So Toby has done the most amazing sound design, but it's very uncomfortable. And there's some amazing bone-cracking bits that you just don't want to hear some of the time. I felt uncomfortable with bits of it because it was so graphic.
Yeah. And interesting you talk about the horrific side of things too. Some of the threats that the Autons make. I think it's on part two as well. The Autons are threatening someone with his family. I thought that was pretty harrowing too.
Oh yes,
Not
and
something
it's amazing.
you get with.
Keep going. Not something you get with what? Are you
Not
frozen?
something you get with Doctor Who ever. So it's very,
Yeah.
very interesting hearing that kind of exchange in a Doctor Who universe.
It was beautifully set up. To start off with, and just talking about his extended family and having photographs, and then when people came with new photographs and the horror that was just being told to you, it was very powerful. You asked about what he was recently. The Seventh Doctor Adventures: The Last Day. He and Matt Fitton wrote The Last Day together, so that was probably what you were thinking about in terms of that's only just come out. And he's also done the same for The Last Day too for Sylvester McCoy, which hasn't come out yet. Which is due out. I'm not sure when it's due out. Another month or two, I think.
Not long now.
Due out in June. June part two. Yeah, I can't believe we're almost into May soon. Like, what's the word? Yeah, this year it's ridiculous.
Is.
Just flying.
It is.
What struck you about the rest of the cast?
Well, who was it that played her friend? Was it Emma somebody?
Yeah, that would be. I was going to say, it was the friend Marie, but I can't see which one down here. What must it? Oh.
Was that Patty, her friend?
Patty, Emma Lowndes, it must have been, yes.
Emma Lowndes, yeah. That was an
Lowndes, yep.
interesting relationship. So to be playing that, should we bring down the spoiler curtain?
Yeah, we're about to spoil things, guys. So if you don't want to know what's going to happen or what some of the twists in this thing, turn off now. But we're about to spoil it big time.
So her friend is basically, well, they say in the extras it's either a ghost or a figment of her imagination. So, because it's a sort of personification of her guilt, because it comes out through the story that she was responsible for her death. And yeah, so she has conversations with this friend throughout the whole story. And it doesn't become apparent until later that she's actually dead, talking to a dead person all the time. So that was a very interesting relationship too. But nicely done
Yeah,
between the two, I thought.
the thing about Torchwood is that torture is a place of death. And so part of the horrors of working there and being in charge is the fact that you see your people die all the time. And if you watch the TV series, that is certainly true in terms of of the people, all the rangers we saw hardly in alive by the end. They're killed off in a rapid succession quite often. And so living with the guilt of that death. And so Lou's character, Roberta, she's in charge of Torchwood, and Patty had been one of the people who worked for her there, and she blames herself for being killed. But yeah, so you've got this character throughout the two plays who you don't realize isn't there. I must admit, as I said, I really now, I've listened to it again recently, well, last day, I do actually want to go and listen to it again, knowing that twist, that actually Patty is dead. Throughout, I mean, I'm pretty sure she's dead for the two. I wanted to confirm this. I'm pretty sure she's dead for the whole two plays. I really want to go and listen to it again with that awareness. There's a musical called Next to Normal, which is a musical about mental illness. And for the whole half, maybe three quarters of the play, the character who's mentally ill, the mother, has a husband, a daughter, and a son. And there's interplay in the whole play between the mother with the rest of her family. And about halfway through, three quarters of the way through, you realize the son's dead. And in fact, he's not actually there. And so you realize that there's this person there who isn't actually touching anyone or touching anything. And so, when they all sit down to eat, he sits at the table. He's having conversations with his mother, but never with his father and sister at the table as well. He never touches his food because he's not actually there. And so it's this really disconcerting thing of this character in this play singing songs, having conversations with his mother. But other people, and so it feels like he's really there, but then you realize, hang on, no one else is addressing him or seeing him. It's only her. They keep the facade up for most of the play. This is the same. You've got this friend who is active throughout this play, doing things, suggesting things, having conversations with, discussing her drinking, but she's not there. And it's not till towards the end you realize this is someone who's actually dead and just. Yeah, I don't think she's a ghost. It's in her mind. So she's just having this conversation with her dead friend throughout the play. It's very cleverly done, but once again, it throws you off balance, which is a lot of what these two plays do is throw you off balance.
Yeah, there's so much in this to unpack, isn't there? I've came away thinking the same thing, that I want to go back and listen to it again after hearing it this time. So, yeah, the other cast members that you were talking about. What about Omari Douglas, who's a interesting cast member because he's worked with Russell T Davies on
Oh,
a
has
couple
he?
of
How's
things,
he?
hasn't he?
Right.
Uh, he
Oh,
was
what's he
in
done?
he
I
was
don't.
in he was one of the lead roles in It's a Sin.
Oh, I know who that is. Okay, yes. Oh, well, he's once again amazing. And once again, it's a different. It's an interesting role. And this is another spoiler. This is about to come down. So in the first play, there's this lovely interplay and friendship between them. But the cliffhanger is kind of this whole. Well, it feels like everyone's dying. But yeah, when he comes back, it's not referred to again. And bit by bit, you realize he's actually now an Auton. And so he's actually killed, and yet he's fully...
It's kind of in the tub title, isn't it?
Yeah, the double. Yes. Because it's kind of in the top title. But the Autons are not... there's the usual Autons that we're used to, which is the simple facsimiles who just do whatever the nesting wants them to. But there's also this higher level of Auton too, which are made at a much higher standard. And part of what's going on in this play is the fact that these really high-level ones are becoming sentient. And so they're now rebelling against the nesting consciousness because they want to live their own lives. And so, yeah, Neil is one of those ones who's, you know, in the second half, is now trying to establish himself as his own person in his own right, which is an interesting touch.
Yeah, so the first episode ends on that cliffhanger with everyone seemingly killed. And as you said, not referred to again. I was doing double takes thinking, what have I missed something? I'm looking down saying, did I skip something accidentally? But no, you've got to come to realize that that the Autons. And before we came on, I did ask you about that, whether Roberta was an Auton at the end, because I wasn't sure whether she was an Auton at the end, or whether she was working with the Nesta, with the high conscious Nestines, or whether she was one of them. And your thoughts were that she was an Auton for the whole time.
Yeah, that's the mega spoiler. Yes, my understanding is, and I want to double check this again, is that for the entire two plays, she is an Auton. So she's one of these high-level functioning, but she's broken away now and she's now independent. But she has no memory of the fact of she is an Auton. So she now fully believes she's Roberta. She's got all of Roberta's memories, all her history, all her bad habits. And she now thinks that she is Roberta in every conceivable way, she is Roberta, except she's made of plastic. But she's always got an awareness of the fact that there's something not right. And so yeah, yeah. She keeps stabbing people with hat pins everywhere she goes to see if they bleed or not, to forget whether they're Autons or not, but never does herself. And I must admit, I had picked up on the way she's not questioning herself in terms of what am I? It's not until the very end where she suddenly, what happens in terms of the climax of the story, won't spoil that for you, is where she comes to realize actually, no, she's actually also an Auton. So, yeah. Mm. But so are those mega spoilers, people who are still listening, do want to know that. But if you listen to it now knowing that, it will make you listen to it in a different way, which I think you'll still enjoy, because I really want to listen to again that. But yeah, sorry if we spoiled that, but we did warn you beforehand.
Absolutely. That comes to sound design and music, I guess. Or was there something else you wanted to speak to about the actors?
I did want to talk about a couple of things just in terms of, I've already talked about Lou's performance, which is just astounding. And I think because her performance is so good, it lifts every other performance. When you are working with the best, you become better. And you can actually feel everyone around her. And mind you, there's good people in there. It's a great cast. I mean, Anthony Howe is lots of good stuff. Barnaby Edwards is in lots of good stuff. So, it's a pretty great cast anyway. But you really feel them lifting around Lou because of the energy she injects. It is so powerful, her performances. I can't overestimate how good it is. I think the two parts really make it very epic. And so it's quite unusual. You talk about the difference. It's actually very modern Doctor Who, where if you've got a two-part Doctor Who story, the second part often seems to bear little relation to the first part. That's quite a common thing now that particularly Stephen Moffat like to do. You have a cliffhanger, and then you start the next episode, and you think, hang on, 6 months have passed, or what's going on here? And so I do think that's a fairly typical thing. And I just wanted to point out, actually, we've talked about already Guinan's writing. I just love his use of language all the time. There's a scene where Roberta's drunk and trying to get out of a cafe. And I think we've all been in restaurants and cafes where they've just got so many plants everywhere, just all this foliage. And she makes a comment about, is this excess foliage really needed in a bar? I'm trying to leave a bar, not hack my way to a rainforest. Away, you evil conifer. And so there's just these very funny lines scattered throughout, helping to pull back the horror and helping to break the bleakness, because it is really bleak. It's because all the topics it's dealing with, the oil shortages, the evil of people. Roberta herself was an ex-spy with MI5. She talks about alcohol, that she says that booze focuses the mind, which is a pretty sad thing. There's politics between the Americans and the English. And she's talking about in America at the moment, because one of the murders that happens is an oil magnate. And the Americans are saying, you know, we didn't kill him. And she makes the comment, well, you know, an American killing an oil magnate would be the same as, you know, trying to slit the throat of Jesus. Because, you know, the way you love oil, you know, you couldn't possibly kill a magnate, no matter how evil they were. So there's all this humor put through this bleakness. And I think that's one of the things the guy just does really well. So yeah, great cast, great writing. Other production stuff you want to mention? What do you think about the new theme or the revised theme?
I loved it, actually. It really made me go back to the 70s in my own mind. Having lived there in that time myself, there were certain things that music brought back memories of. My folks used to have various records of this popular composer at the time called, I don't know how you pronounce the surname because it's French, but it was always in, to me, it was spelt Paul Mauriat. Do you know Paul Mauriat? Or never heard of him?
Mauriat
or something like that. And he would do like covers of all popular songs and things like that. So they had a lot of his records, and some of the Torchwood theme brought back memories of that for me. So I think that worked really well. And the way they finished a lot of the scenes with the, you know, with that sting of music from the theme was really very 70s too. So I think that was done exceptionally well.
So yeah, so Blair Merritt did all the music, and of course Blair's done lots of stuff for Doctor Who and Big Finish in the past. Now I guess Blair Merritt, if he was French, it'd be Blair Moesh, maybe. Anyhow, so what were you going to say next, Wayne?
Yeah, so the sound design was great too. Those autons from Spearhead from Space being that sound that's the creepiest to me was used really well, invoking them. You didn't quite get as much. I didn't get as much auton action as I thought I would, but it's, you get a combination of the Spearhead auton whirring sound, but also the sort of the creeping plastic sound that you got in Rose too. You get that combination, which I think is really clever, and because it brings both eras kind of together. Did you catch that as well, Philip?
Yeah, I thought there's lots of touches. Of both Rose and the earlier stuff. I mean, they've got all the typical sound effects. You know, they've managed to, you know, the hand opening sound, the guns firing, the sound, and they do a shooting and then a total. What do they do in Spirit of Space? Total elimination,
destroy, and a total destruction.
Is that what it's called? But where they do the second shot and they disappear in a puff of smoke. They've got the buzzing of the cube. I was going to say that's not right though. The plastic round things, the sound make when they're sort of beeping.
The energy unit.
The energy units, that's it, well done. So yeah, so there's all these traditional sound effects plus lots of new ones as well. And so the blend actually works really well. It's a very deep story, but has some lovely nostalgic moments as well.
Yeah, for sure. Did you have any more notes that you wanted to cover off on the story?
I think I managed to say everything I wanted to say. I do think it's not a story for the faint-hearted. You heard Lou say how much she enjoyed doing it in the interview, because she really enjoyed the challenge this was. Lou, what range can't she be in with Big Finish? She just wants to be in every single range. I think I listed them off during the interview. I do think this is worth listening to, but it's not a I don't know. See, Torchwood, it changes style and tone all the time. But this is probably as bleak as you'll get in the Torchwood style in terms of tone. Usually we talk about the happy ones that we like, but that being said, there's enough bleak ones along the way we've liked as well. So, yeah, enjoy it because it's worth listening to. Anything else you want to say, Dwayne?
Yeah, well, I'm a huge Autons fan, so anything with Autons on the cover like these ones have, I'm going to get into no matter what anyway. But, yeah, I agree with you. It's a pretty dense story, but completely enjoyable if you're willing to invest the time and effort into it. And it's great to get those little nostalgic touches throughout too. So it ticks a lot of the boxes for me. So it's a thumbs up from me, this one.
Yep, happy as well.
Very good. We've done all the other business for the podcast, Philip. So
we have.
We can now dismiss ourselves.
Yeah, and anyone who's brave enough to stay on, well done. You got to the end. Congratulations.
Very good. Appreciate all the comments too, as I said at the beginning from the outset. So drop any comments below or about this one, or you can send us an email as usual, or contact us on the socials. We're there at Audio Sirens, and look forward to seeing you all next time. And Philip,
yes, Dwayne.
You have a good one, eh?
You too, mate. Take care.
See ya.